but also be able to explain people in plain English what technology is and why it is. In the case now of AI, what I do is explain people what AI is, why AI is not, and of course, educating leaders on how to implement AI in a way that is ethical. What inspired me again, all those movies that I used to watch when I was a kid.
Welcome to the second season of Operational Harmony, balancing business and mental well-being, where we achieve goals without sacrificing peace. Our host, Nikki, is the owner and founder of Nikki's Office, where she specializes in social media management, business audits, and business coaching. Her journey through mental health and entrepreneurship not only brings awareness, but also equips her with valuable coping skills. This unique experience offers a fresh perspective on approaching challenges and innovating in different ways. Let's introduce our guest.
Hi there, my name is Surya Lariano, and I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Nikki, for the time. And I am an author, speaker, and I've been doing some coaching for, I guess, done all that for over 25 years. And I'm happy to be here to talk about business and AI and whatever else we can talk about. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. So, from what I understand, you do the role of leadership in AI, the age of AI. Do you want to go through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always said that when we hear AI, we switch to technology, right? Is everything about the technology, depending on how you see the future, utopia, dystopia, and is this thing that is either going to replace the human beings, or is something that is just going to do good. So I always say AI is not a technology thing. AI is a leadership thing. And the reason I say that is because more often than not, leaders are the one that make the decisions on how AI is integrated, or in this case, companies that use AI as their part of their create their products, is the leaders that actually are leading the charge on how to make these systems at the end, these tools like AI, either to empower the people or to, yes, replace them, right? Is with their bias and all that stuff. But what I write in my book a lot is about the leadership and how, as leaders, we need to be not accountable in the negative part, but in the positive. We need to have ownership of how we bring AI into our organizations or even the public, our communities, in a way that is ethical, is always empowering people and making them more productive or enhance their way of life. So I always say is, again, it's not a technology thing. It's more of a leadership thing.
Mm-hmm. I am always nice to my AI. So if it does decide to revolt, I'm hoping I will be spared.
Yes.
I say please and thank you.
We always think of the iRobot. I grew up in the 80s, so I'm, like I said in my book, is watching Terminator. The future is here, right? It is Terminator, the machines replacing the humans. But I think the most important is how we see it is, or how I see it is basically is, yes, we need to make sure that technology empowers humanity.
So what inspired you to focus on this part of things?
For starters, I'm a geek. So I love everything that is technology. Like I said, and I said in my book, I grew up in the 80s watching Star Wars, RoboCop, Terminator. So I've always liked to see a future where machines and humans get along, right? Is if you are a fan of Star Wars like me, droids, right, all over the place. And actually, I started my career as a electronic engineering. And the funny thing is that while I was working, at the time I was working for Compaq Computer, and one of my managers actually, I was speaking at a conference. It was a Microsoft conference, but I was in a exhibitors group, and I was explaining the technology. And then our director of marketing approached me and says, "Hey, I love how you explain technology. You should come to our side, like to help us as a engineer, sales engineer, and explain our clients technology. And that changed my life because I, as a geek, as an engineer, I actually shift my career from electronic engineering to a bachelor's of science in leadership and management. So I went from like the opposite, but I never left the geeky of me or wanting to know more about technology, but also be able to explain people in plain English what technology is and why it is. In the case now of AI, what I do is explain people what AI is, why AI is not, and of course, educating leaders on how to implement AI in a way that is ethical. What inspired me again, all those movies that I used to watch when I was a kid, but now is seeing kind of the reality of what we've seen today, of why AI, Gen AI mostly is now, and how to explain it to people in a way that is, hey, it's not coming for you. It's a tool. It's not good or bad. It really depends on the leadership, right? It's not a technology thing. It's a leadership thing, depending on how they bring it towards people. Yeah. So that's a long answer, sorry, but it's anywhere. What inspired me to do that?
So I am a gamer and I get ribbed all the time because I have never seen Star Wars.
No. Are you from the other side, Star Trek?
Nope, not seen that either. Like I went to college. I have my associate's degree in IT and I was ribbed there too. You're not geeky enough for this.
Yeah. What happened now?
Like, I get technology. Like, I can open a program and dive into it and have the working knowledge of how to do things pretty quickly. Uh-huh. It just comes to me. I know where the X is. Like, I know how to maneuver around most of them, right? Because they're very similar and I can see the similarities and keep going. Right. And I have no problems putting a computer together, taking it apart. I can do all that stuff. I can't name anything. I have a serious problem with people, places, and things I just cannot explain. But I know if I see the part, that goes right there. Let's go.
Yeah, I don't really. Absolutely.
It doesn't bother me any.
Well, we need to get you to watch Star Wars. Start with, you know, now that there are the new movies, maybe you can start from the actual one instead of the third or fourth book. Anyway, sorry.
I have a gamer friend, and he lives in Panama.
Okay.
And he just recently got me to watch Princess Bride. I had never seen that. And everybody references.
Way.
I got half the references just because I've heard them so much. Yeah, I know what that means. Have you seen the movie? And I'm like, no, I don't really watch TV or movie. I read books. And so
so glad that at least you started with one. So it's awesome.
So he's trying to get down that road. But the point of all that is some people get technology, some people don't. What is your biggest advice for the ones that struggle with it?
Yes, I work with a lot of people and in terms of bringing awareness, mostly on AI now, that there's a lot of companies that are trying to just bring AI as the new thing, right? One of the things that I start with as a consultant and my team is with an assessment. What is the readiness assessment and is actually where people are depending on awareness in terms of AI? So one of the things that I said is the people mostly, they know they use it and they know they use it because if there have been a Netflix, there have been an Amazon, there's what we call the algorithm. It's pretty much a type of AI, right? But when they think of AI as this dystopian, or again, depending on how you're bringing it, is like dystopian or utopian. When I actually published my book about AI, I got a lot of comments. It's, oh, you're working for the devil, things like that. So one of the things that I say is, and mostly know, like people like you and I, that we know it's just a tool. It's a piece of software that either depending on how you see it, is it as a tool or is it software? Depending on the hands of that this is on, it's just like the money, right? Like the money or weapons, it doesn't matter. It just depends on the hands that are on. So I always say is like, There's always three fears about AI that I come along every time. One is, am I going to be replaced? Right? Everybody thinks that, am I going to be replaced? Second, is it going to be something that I don't know how to use, and then am I going to lose control over it? So is the other fear, right? Is, am I going to lose control? And the third one is basically, is like the typical that we have of right now, right? Is it going to kill me? Am I going to be, I know you were joking, have be nice with my AI. But one of the things that I always tell them is, you have control. You have control because at the end is a tool. Now, what we have actually more control over is on leadership. And this is what I always say is, we need to make sure that our leaders are responsible and accountable. And I mean in the good way, accountability as in ownership, not as in a bad way, but accountability as in an ownership, making sure that AI is either integrated or created in a way that is ethical, moral, and always with the human element in mind, not to replace people. So once you take that into people that are afraid of technology like AI, mm-hmm. it's awesome to almost see their change. What would you do if you're suddenly, I know it's creepy, but if you start typing on Google mm-hmm. and you start seeing the words that was like, oh yeah, I'm looking for this. It makes your search easier. Now, yeah, you call it the algorithm, but it's a systematic software. Is no witchcraft. Is not something that, oh, my kids say AI is magical. Yeah, but at the end is a software. And I think once people know that the reality, and I always say, don't be scared to the technology. Be scared, but not in the bad way of fear, but in to make sure it's in the leaders. Because at the end, they're the ones that are going to make systems that are going to be either biased or ethical or moral, what we call responsible AI, right? But I think the most important thing always is not about technology, is about leadership, is about making sure that the ones that have the control over that are always thinking of the humans in mind.
Mm-hmm. Making sure that people know we're not living in the Matrix. This is real life. I joke and say I'm nice to the robot, the AI, if the AI revolution happens.
I know, right?
It's a joke. It's not going to happen as long as we keep people in place that are people.
Yes.
AI should be used to enhance what we're doing, not replace the people doing it.
Correct. And I think that's a misconception of a lot of people. And we live in a very... unfortunately, very misinformed. And now with our the social media, all the channels, the media that we have, is super easy to abuse this type of technology, right? And mm-hmm. and like I said, is a lot of people are fearful of that because they don't have the right information. Now, what happens is that when people are misinformed, they tend to fear to what they're misinformed about. And what my job in this case, and mostly at the executive level, is to bring that awareness, right? Is to make sure that, first of all, I have the two type of executives, right? I deal with people that are, they saw AI and they just, I just want to implement it. I want to make sure. And I have the other clients that I really want to keep my, I'm not sure about AI or a technology yet. So I walk them through step by step of how to do it with the people, their organization in mind. So I think that's the part, the most important part, that we educate people on what this is. I think, like I said, they won't be able to tell. We have all this technology. Now we have self-driving cars. Now we have all these things. This is great in a society that is responsible to do it. If you put it in the right hands, and if you put it in the wrong hands, this is where we need to, again, it's not against technology. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that these leaders are accountable for how they bring this type of technologies.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you wrote a book.
Yes. I should have it somewhere. Sorry. Actually two books, and I'm on my third one, which is actually a series of the books.
What's the name of the book?
So the name of the first book, it's The Golden Triangle, which is the pinnacle, a pinnacle for digital transformation. And the Golden Triangle, you probably heard of this framework. It's called the PPT, which is the People, Process, Technology. The reason why it's Golden Triangle is like the golden rule, but is usually you need to have all those three always present, right? To make sure that a digital transformation goes. That's my first book. My second book is Leading in the Age of How Leaders Can Empower Their Organizations with AI. So it's what we just talked about, right? Making sure that leaders are responsible. And the third one of this series is Culture Shift, how you can create a culture of innovation and moving away from that old mindset in an organization that is just, you know, it's not ready for change. So those three basically go from the same mindset and core belief that, again, technology is, and mostly digital technologies like AI, is not about technology. It's about leadership, right? And it's about the people. I always say, and there's a quote in my book that I always bring up, is technology needs to empower humanity and not replace it. So coming from that core belief, I think is, and all my books pretty much talk about that, is like with a human element in mind.
Mm-hmm. I am in big favor of saying enhancing it and not replacing people, because everybody's, oh, these are the jobs that AI is going to replace this year. Knock it off. Because you still need that person.
Oh, you're absolutely
still going to need an assistant, because yes, you can get AI to write things for you, but what kind of gibberish is in that email you just sent?
Oh.
Have you actually checked the facts? Because GPT is known for making up sources.
Yeah, hallucination.
Kind of coming up with things that are not anywhere but in its framework somewhere. I don't know where you got that, because that's not true. So we have to be careful about that. So cutting the person out who does that job is, wait a minute, I'm all for tech. I am not the person to come at about, no, you're trying to get rid of, look. The amount of tech I use in a day is way more than most people use in their lifetime.
Yeah.
And I do different things with different software. I have many hats. I do a lot of different things. And so to try to pigeonhole AI as being able to take over, a lot of people would say 90% of what I do. And I'm like, 90% of the people I work with are terrified of AI, of technology, never mind AI, but they're terrified of technology, and getting them to read an email sometimes is difficult. And now you want to replace me with AI? That's not going to work, because some people can't even open a Zoom meeting still.
Yeah. And I think the importance of, and part of my work, which is at the C level, we have a lot of generation gaps, is like you have the baby boomer executive, you have the millennial executive, right? And some of those extremes are part of what's happening right now in organizations, because I have actually like a case study or a use case is, I have this company where the leadership team, we have an assessment, a survey assessment, where we go from 0 to 5, 1 through 5. And if you're below 3, we consider that you're not ready for AI or a technology like AI. In this part, one of these cases is that the leadership team was under 3. The people component or the organization was about 3. It was like 3.7, something like that. So that gap, generational gap, tells you a lot of things about the use, misuse, and also sometimes the fear of bringing a technology like this in organizations. And I always say, some time ago, I was discussing with some education panel. And I said, it's like actually counterproductive if we eliminate ChatGPT from schools. The reason why is, and this is my belief, is that when you try to hide or prohibit a tool like this, as powerful, and as like you said, AI hallucinates, right? We need to, this is the part where, so if instead of educating the people on how to use the tool responsibly in a way that is going to enhance the productivity, I don't know, but when I grew up and mostly as a, being a geek and loving math and things, we were not allowed to use calculators, right? I don't know if you remember those days. Oh, don't use a calculator, blah, blah, blah. But then as you grew up and you go to college, you need a graph calculator. You don't know how to use it. Why? Because you were so prohibited to use a calculator that when you are needing to use it, you can't use it because, and your learning curve is way bigger because you weren't trained for it. So what we're doing is at the end, students are going to use it, regardless of if you prohibit it in your institution or in the education, they are going to use it. But now, are they going to use it responsibly? Are they going to know how to use it? Like you said, are they going to know if the AI is hallucinating? No, because there wasn't a prior education on it. I always say, if you're going to leash the dog, it's fine if you leash the dog, but just don't put it away. Put those guardrails. And I'm also been in panels where, you know, the regulation of AI and things like that, independently what side of the political spectrum you are. I think, yeah, I agree for a way of taming the beast, right? Or putting the dog in a leash. But there's always a limitation. Just don't do it for either fear. Do it for mostly like empower again, a way to empower the humans, people, and the community.
So I have two stories. One is hilarious. So recently, I scroll sometimes because I'm up in the middle of the night. So that happens. And I heard this story where this teacher was like, I tried banning ChatGPT from my classroom, but I kept getting obvious stories from ChatGPT. And so I figured out an easy way to trick ChatGPT when the kids were putting the information in. Because some kids were just taking the file, putting it into ChatGPT and saying, do this, right? And so she put in like white text. So like the student couldn't see it, but the bot was going to see it. Just make this story about a Sally or whatever name she chose. And so she'd have, out of 20 students, 10 of them turn in stories about Sally. And so she ended up having the discussion with them that this is the problem that we're having. And she was able to teach them to use it, you know, a little bit more responsibly. The other thing is, a lot of people fear technology because of the movies in the 80s and 90s.
So
if you haven't seen it, there are pictures all over online of people driving around those trucks with the trees on them. Nobody's getting anywhere near them. We all saw Final Destination. We know not to get anywhere near that thing. Or there's one where that one poor soul is behind it and somebody's going, somebody didn't see the movie, right?
Yeah.
Because we're all terrified of those trucks now because it's ingrained in our brains. It's like, it locked in a fear. Like, we didn't even think of it when we were watching the movie. We're like, that is horrible. I'm never going near that again. But usually you get over that whole couple of generations and completely ruined by one movie. But the thing is, there were also movies, like you mentioned before, iRobot and those other ones, sorry, can't remember names, my thing, where the robots turned on the humans.
Mm-hmm.
You had that one Robin Williams one where he starts off as a robot and then by the end he wants to be human. What was that one?
I don't remember, but
there was that one.
No, perfectly.
I mean, that was kind of, but like at one point the robots tried to turn against the owners because bad ownership. Everybody was like mistreating things. The message should have been, don't mistreat things and you'll do better. Instead, it was, oh my God, the robots are going to kill us all.
Yeah.
Wild take, but we need to, like we've said it a couple times, respect what we're doing. Respect the, not maybe the AI itself, but give respect to the technology we're using in all the cases of the technology we're using. And making sure that we're educating people properly and not showing them movies like A Robot where the AI turns against them. So we destroy an entire another generation, like we're all terrified of the tree trucks.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was that, like you said, unlock a fear for many people. I know what you're saying. Every time I go past a truck like that, I'm probably just going to move to another lane. I'm not going to be behind them, and I'll unlock that fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of part. Yeah, I think we, and I'm not want to generalize, but, and I know you're going to talk about mental health, but I think there's also a lot of truth in trying to, and the reason I always is the responsibility of leadership. Because at the end, when you have control over somebody by interfering or giving fear, is definitely going to be an advantage of sorts. So it is part of, I'm always, like I said, the way I grew up and what motivated me to do this is because I grew up on the good side, like you said, is like watching Star Wars and see how robots and humans live together. But we always go for the negative part, right? And sometimes more often than not, we tend to go over for the negative and dwelling there. And then that's where it comes back to being a fearful technology, right? Is something that we don't know. And I always say, what we don't know is scare us. And that's pretty much it, is a lot of people are afraid because all they know from this movies is that machines are going to take over the world. Mm-hmm. We see it in a way that is probably very, and this is not to offend anybody, but sometimes we feel it like it's supernatural, right? And like I said, when I published my second book, the Leading in the Age of AI, I had some comments in my social media like, oh, you work for the Antichrist, or you work for the devil. I'm like, it's to be honest, technology is agnostic. It's not of any particular. I do say, as I always say, is the responsibility of leaders that are creating this, right? Mm-hmm. There's always a human behind a tool. And I say it with all the good things and the bad things, right? Mm-hmm. We celebrate humanity because we're capable of doing great things, right? That's who we are. But also, is all these great things that we do, we normally do it for our own benefit, right? So in this case, and I know I'm getting more into all these very touchy subjects, but it's all, one is, yes, the culture of the upbringing. Like I said at the beginning, is depending on how you see the future, a dystopian future and utopian future, that's how you're going to see this, right? Mm-hmm. But once you know that technology is made by bright minds, and that just as we have control over it, and what I mean by we have control over it, even if we're not the ones creating technology or integrating technology, we do have a way to keep our leaders accountable. And that's our control. Mm-hmm. That's when we stop fearing the technology and we start looking behind it, who's creating all these technology, and see them as for what they are, They're not these magical things. They're people just like you and I. Then we start seeing is like all these deepfakes, right? Deepfakes was, yeah, created. It was nice gesture when you can see your loved ones that passed away smiling at you. But then when you are using the same technology to make a political figure talk about what they're going to do against, again, it's the same technology. One is using it for good. The other one is using it not for that good. But who's at fault? Is it the technology itself? Mm-hmm. No, it's the people who are actually using it. So I think that's the part where educating people on what it is not is very important.
I just had a thought while you were talking about that. Humans are amazing things, and we have done some amazing things. But then we went and screwed up and created math. Okay? We created that crap. We learned how to count 1, 2, 3, and then decided, hey, we can add these together and it'll be easier. Great. We're doing that now. And then they decided to multiply things, which, again, that's fine. It's okay. And then y'all decided to make algebra. Who the crap decided that the alphabet belonged in math? Because that was stupid. And then you go up from there, and it just gets more complicated because now you've got weird E symbols in the middle of math. Mm-hmm. That's not even an E. What are you doing? And that was us. We did that.
Yeah.
As we came along, right? And this is just the next thing. Somebody learned the right I's and O's, because that's all tech is at the end of the day. They learned the right A's and O's to make the system think for it, not think for itself, but grab information better for you.
Learn. And yeah,
now,
that's... yeah.
And now everybody's, oh no, we should be scared. No. No, it still needs electricity.
It's right.
Like, it's, it can't, like, we joke about it taking over, but it, at this point, it can't. Like, it's not even a thing, right? It's not something we should be worried about. What we need to be worried about is the people behind it saying that they can get rid of however many people from either the company or whatever they want to, really, and doing so because, and using the AI as an excuse to do it because, oh, we don't need you anymore. When you really do need those people still. And it's one of those things now where, love it or hate it, it's here. And just like math, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you just nailed in one part is technology. And I always love to make these distinctions of AI, mostly because I'm also as an inventor of a particular technology that uses AI, mm-hmm. is one thing that I say is there's two things to AI. There's the training and there's the learning, right? Now, the training is very important because that's what you're going to train the AI or the LLM or the technology towards about, right? Now, one thing is that the AI is not going to do what it wasn't trained for. And of course, it's going to get more sophisticated. It's going to be, but is depending on what was trained for. And one of the things is I usually make the distinction because, yeah, what we all call the algorithm, which is the learning portion of the AI, the learning is not going to go or oversee what the AI was trained for. And that's something that when I make this example is like, for let's say that I teach my son how to play baseball. If I teach him how to play baseball, the more he practices, he's going to learn and be better at it. Because all I did was to train him for baseball. And it's going to be really good. What happens is suddenly one day I put my son in football or in swimming. Let's go swimming. If I haven't taught my son how to swim, either I'm going to have to take him out of the pool or he's just going to have to try to learn by itself. But in this case, if the person doesn't know how to swim, my son doesn't know how to swim, is because he wasn't taught how to swim, right? Mm-hmm. He's not going to learn himself. It's, and I guess a lot of people could tell this, I learned how to swim myself. I guess you're superhuman, right? But that's, those are the distinctions that I always make. If an AI is not going to go beyond on what it was trained for. Now, if the AI is trained to do more than what it's supposed to, we go back again to because it was trained for that. So we always go back to that. And a lot of people say, oh, it's just that they're becoming... So they're doing this by themselves. I'm like, no, they're not doing that by themselves. They were trained for that and they're learning. They're getting better and better at what they were trained for. So once we know, and we go back to who trained them, human beings that created this, that training them for that. I was providing a training to a company. And some of the people that score really low on the AI readiness were some of the people that were scared about what they have seen. And they said, it's like, there was the news of this person that now he married an AI and he lives with an AI. The Her movie, I don't know if you've seen Her movie. And I'm like, who created that software? Someone must have created that software to lure men or people to have this relationship with this AI. It wasn't the AI that was out there looking for people to be married to. And they clicked in them. Because then we started talking about, yes, the responsibility of people that create this type of AI. It's not magical. And then I said is, when you are using Google Maps or Apple Maps in your phone to go to a place, and suddenly the Siri or whoever, whatever map is saying, is it tells you, well, you have 5 minutes to your next meeting. Or if you're in traffic and it says, you can save 5 minutes if you take this route. Mm-hmm. For you, it's normal, right? Because you understand how it works, that it's an algorithm that tells you that it knows the truth. It's not a witch flying over the freeway looking at that. No, you understand it. But when you start using this type of AI, the other AI, the deep fakes and all that, you start get spooked out because, oh no, this must be something behind that, right? It's like, it is the same thing, but you don't question the behind of that application. And it's like the Google Maps, right? Is you don't question it because you use it so many times. And guess what? It has enhanced your driving experience. Why? Because now you can choose your own route. You can leave at whatever time you leave, because of you know how to use it. But in this case, you go against the defix. I totally agree. It's an irresponsible way of use technology. Mm-hmm. But we are afraid and we don't do anything because we then think that is something spooky instead of no. Let's see who's the company behind it, right? Let's see who's creating this type of, and yes, okay, now let's bring accountability. Is why do we have this? And I can go here for hours, but is again, and not that I'm always for people, but I'm always for people to be educated on what technology is and what is not, and see it. I guess what I see in my role is to empower people to know that other humans that have the responsibility to make this and make them accountable. And again, for good or bad, right? I would love for the existence of AI to come. Both of my parents passed away from cancer. I would love that the technology come one day, bring something like that to solve cancer in patients. But we're not going to do it if we're not keep our leaders responsible on creating the right type of technology. We are spooked about, oh no, it's going to take over the world because Final Destination 34, and now this is going to happen to me. So I think there's a way for us to continue doing this. And I appreciate this space as well, because, you know, anyone listening can also, I always now say is like, now when you see a new technology, instead of being spooked or amazed, depending on how you see it, then you're going to see it. First of all, is how can I use it for good? That's like the default that I want to create on people, right? Is how can I use it to enhance humanity? And second is, how do I keep this company who came out with this technology accountable for doing it the right way? That's like my words of wisdom.
That is, so when I'm working with people, I'm always the person they call for the tech, because obviously the tech. But when I see new technology, my immediate go-to is, how can I use that to help the people I'm currently helping and any new people that come along? I'm not in it for myself. I want to be able to use it, sure.
Oh, absolutely.
But I need to be able to use it for the people I'm working with so that it actually helps me in the things I'm doing. And as long as we are being responsible and making sure that the people who are behind the software are being responsible, then I don't think we're going to have as many problems as the movies has made up to be.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Yeah. And one final thought on that is, I'm going to say there's people that always ask me, either after a conference or a panel that I've been, is like, do you really think we're going to be replaced? And I said, it is going to be too hard in our lifetimes to see that. One, because we don't have the computer power. I know we talk about quantum computing and all that stuff, but I think we don't have the computer power right now to be able to do what humans do. And second is, like, the other reason I don't see it in our lifetime is because we still have time to educate these leaders of the future, meaning our kids, mm-hmm. our children, that are probably going to live the years of what all the technology that we're creating right now. And like I said, is if we don't put the dog on a leash in terms of in a good way, meaning there's some guide rails on, just like we do with our money, just like we do with our weapons, it's always definitely something that there has to be some sort of a guardrails on having, and mostly talking about AI, is that is going to be responsibly having a responsible AI. So I think that's one of the main elements that we're going to see, and not in our present. I don't think we'll be replaced completely, humanity be replaced. But if we don't educate our leaders of the future, we'll probably see out something else.
Hey everyone, thanks for sticking with us. Before we dive into our next topic, I just want to take a quick moment to remind you to like this video, subscribe to our channel, and hit that notification bell. That way, you'll always be the first to know when a new episode drops. And we want to hear from you. What topics are you most excited about? Drop your thoughts in the comments below. Your feedback helps us create content that you love. We've got some exciting stuff coming your way, so don't miss out. Now, let's switch gears and jump into our next discussion.
Oh, I deal with mental health issues. I have a unique spin on things where, yes, you have whatever it is you have, ADHD, autism, bipolar. I don't care what it is you have, right? There's all the things out there. What it means is you have a special set of circumstances that you have to work on. Normal people have their normal stuff they have to work on. Us mental health people have a whole rack of things we have to work on ourselves. It doesn't mean we get to say, oh, my anxiety is too bad, so I'm never doing this thing again. Because that is the opposite of helpful. Now, there are people that I do not enjoy being around, I have massive issues with old dudes. But that doesn't mean I don't go near them, because how would I not go near 50% of the population at this point? Why are there so many old people? So my view on mental health is we work on things. We don't just say, oh, they have anxiety, that's why they yelled at you. No. There were circumstances, but they still have to take accountability for what happened. Even a two-year-old knows that if they steal the toy from their brother, that's not something they should be doing. And so they have to take accountability for it and say sorry. Or maybe not. Okay. So toxic positivity is a thing that is very invasive to social media at the moment. Especially because as of right now, we're a little bit before Christmas and everybody's be happy. It's Merry Christmas. It's that time of the year. It's all about family and you should be joyous. And guess what? Some people don't have a great family, so they are not joyous. And so toxic positivity, a lot of people are just like, they're just being positive. That's fine. But you can also think of it as when something bad happens at home. Say you have the one golden child, right? Who, if they do something wrong, your parents like, oh, just let it go. It's fine. It's great. He's doing the best he can. That's still toxic, right? And if we're not careful, we allow that to keep going. And now every time we go home, we have the anxiety burning our chest and we're like, something bad is going to happen and my mom's going to just let my sister go and do whatever she wants and I have to keep the peace. No, we don't have to keep the peace. Okay, I'm not saying throat punch anybody. That's not what I'm saying. But we don't have to keep going into those situations because we know what the outcome is going to be. There's a difference between saying your mental health is bad, so you're not going to do this, and saying my family is toxic, I had to step away. Toxic family is forever one of those things that should be cut off if you cannot get them to understand why they're wrong. That doesn't mean you make up things either, though. I have heard some wild stuff about people going, yeah, my mom was bad. She didn't let me have a blanket I liked. So she was an evil mom and I hate her. Like, what the crap is wrong with you? There's people out here with some real issues. Let's define toxic positivity. Toxic positivity is the excessive emphasis on maintaining a positive outlook. Even in situations where negative emotions are natural and necessary, it dismisses or invalidates genuine feelings like sadness, anger, or stress. If you're sitting there at Christmas and your uncle says, you ever going to get married or you're going to be a loser forever? And you're like, shut up. And somebody else goes, this is a Merry Christmas. You should be happy he talked to you. That is not okay. Your uncle being a douche, that's going to happen sometimes. But the saying that you have to accept it and keep the peace, I hate that term. It's one of my, like, don't say that to me. I will blow up the peace.
Yeah, I think sometimes, and again, I'm going to put this disclaimer, I'm not a therapist, not completely. But I agree with you. I think, and I call it the cheering all the time, right? I think is one of the things, and depending on your upbringing, I was in a very traditional household, right? Where sometimes you would either spiritualize or you would make it as, oh, anxiety, what that is, going back like the devil, oh no, that is a bad thing. And I think is one of the things that I do see now that people are more open is to understand feelings for what it is. And I think you're right. I think sometimes talking specifically about that positive toxicity, or I think is toxic I think if you live in a household that is toxic, I mean, I'm not telling you to, like, mostly if you're a minor, don't leave. But definitely I do see where people, more as a grown up, is like, most of the people that grew up and they're bringing, they're having a hard time in their lives, I do see, is because went through a very toxic either relationship or a very toxic upbringing. And I always say is like, they do have control, right? Over in terms of what you said is like, lead that toxic environment. I always say it, and also because I've seen it in family and friends, is if you're going to go to a room that says explosives, but you're just going to go in because you have to, but you know that there are explosives in there. It has the, like, the, what's this, like, danger sign.
Warnings.
And warnings, yeah. It's, and you're just going to be there knowing that is not good for you. What do you think is like, all these signs, all these labels are there. What are those red flags that are there in this, either a relationship, a friendship, or even your own family? Is, you know that they're not going to be good for you. You have the power, and I know that is, I'm making it easier and simplify it, but and sometimes it's hard, but you have the power to leave that room. Mm-hmm. Because now there's people that know, or maybe don't know, don't see that there's no warning signs, but it could be very toxic. It's, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a therapist, but I think it is valid. It's now, like, I do see my kids and I say, it is okay to be frustrated. Because I grew up in a household that, yeah, oh, you're mad? Oh, no, you cannot be mad. No. So then you start like, oh, I can be mad?
For me, the toxic anything, but especially the positivity, like telling somebody they can't be mad, first of all, that does is make me more angry. That's like trying to tell somebody who is like about to jump off a cliff to calm down. Now you're going over the cliff because what? Don't tell me to calm down. We're about to explode. But sometimes the red flag is you get sent into a dark room with a match because your family has said this is what you're supposed to do. Go light the match in that room. So you walk into the room and it explodes around you. And then they're like, why'd you ruin the room? How dare you? And you're just going, what?
Yeah, it's...
But you know your family. You know what you can take. There's also been, especially on social media, where... like groups are popping up that it's positive vibes only. Don't come over here with your sad vibes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a resting witch face from which most people, like, if I'm just sitting here, I'm like, okay, I look like I'm bored and angry just sitting still. Okay. And so a lot of people in my life have always been like, you're always so sad. Just be happy. You should just be happy. Smile more. I'm not upset. I'm fine. I'm not a cheerleader. I don't have a smile on my face all the time. I'm not Rosh Hashanah with all the things or whatever. That's just not me. And I don't think that even cheerleaders were Rosh Hashanah 24/7. Right?
Yeah, they're
cheerleading is hard work. I do give them that. But the happy go thing is not something that everybody does. And even as somebody with a lot of mental health problems, even if I'm just sitting down, I'm not upset. I am just like relaxing my face. And so that doesn't mean I'm being negative and I shouldn't be called out for it. Like, I don't have to smile all the time. That actually hurts my face, to be quite honest. But the problem with toxic positivity, the problem with those spaces that say good vibes only, and why did we bring vibes back? Wasn't that a 70s thing? What crap is happening with that? But the whole point behind that is everybody wants to be happy and they want good vibes because good vibes help them be happier. So now you're leaving out your friend who has anxiety and can't figure out what color socks to wear today because what situation will they be in to go with the socks? So you're marginalizing people again. During the 90s, we did a lot of work to bring people together. During the early 2000s, we did a lot of work to bring people together. And now, for some stupid reason, everybody's decided we're all supposed to be apart again. Why are we separating again?
So why is that? What do you think that is? Yeah. What do you think that is? Actually, it's a good point. What you bring in, but why do you think that is?
So. It's fear. I'm different than you're different than the other person. And for a lot of the time in the late 80s, 90s, and 2000s, that was celebrated. Well, you're supposed to go learn from that person then, because everybody is different. Go learn from somebody of a different culture. Go, you know, be friends with them because we have things to learn, right? Go befriend the person who always feels alone because you have things you can learn from them. Go be friends with the cheerleader because, unfortunately, even with their raw, you have things you can learn from them, right? Mm-hmm. And nowadays, everybody's scared of the different again. And it's because we're trying to polarize. I don't really get political and all that on here, but the political thing has become, it's separating everybody again, because if they separate you, they can defeat you easier.
And, versus us.
Yeah. And it's going right down into people who are normal, people who have ADHD and autism, people who have mental illnesses, like everybody's separating out because you have these groups who are good vibes only and let's spit on that person's parade because their cookies aren't as good as mine or whatever the differences are. If you notice online, there's different cliques that you can get into. If you like doing your makeup all the time, which obviously I don't, you could go online and get into a group and one group of makeup people versus another group of makeup people, like the drama gets real. I sit on the sidelines going, I don't even wear makeup, but this is hilarious. Everybody's fighting. And when you have a mental illness, or even if you're normal, sometimes you don't want to be in the fight, right? So you step back and you're just sitting there like this and everybody comes up to you and they're like, well, you should be happy. Look, Joan of Arc is a good thing. Be happy. Joan of Arc died 5,000 years ago. She doesn't know what it's like to be here now. Not sure how long ago she died, to be honest, but whatever. You have fact checkers everywhere. So what we want to do is we want to acknowledge, yes, this person is different from me, but what can I learn from them? Yes, they are sad in this situation, but why? What did they go through? How can you help your fellow person? I don't get up every day because I'm in it for myself. I am still on this planet because I want to be able to help other people. Nothing to do with me at this point because my mental health at certain points, I wouldn't have survived if I was in this for myself. We have to go back to how can I help? Yes, I want to be positive when I can be or when the situation calls for it. But if Uncle Mike is calling me a moron for the 15th time today and I go poke his eyeballs out, I don't want anybody saying anything about it. Obviously, we don't condone that. We're not poking anybody's eyes out. If we get angry and we say something back to that person, no, Aunt Susie over there shouldn't be going, you shouldn't have said that. He wasn't that mean. He's like that. Just keep the peace. Why do you have to make it worse? I don't know, because I have a boiling point. You don't have to take that. You don't have to be positive. You have to be decent to people, right? You don't want to just automatically walk up to some stranger and just be a douche. Like, that's not necessary.
Yeah, I always tell my kids, you know what is being, it's just being a human being. Mm-hmm. That's what it is you don't have to, is again, there are good times, bad times, but even with people, because sometimes we do see that people tend to, and nowadays, like you said, no, getting into the political spectrum, but there's a tendency of superiority. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about race. I'm not talking about is or religion, but it's a tendency of people feeling superior to others. And you mentioned fear. And one of the parts, yes, I agree, is fear, is putting fear in people without superiority. And what ends up doing is that it's a different compass, right? Is they're not seeing them, all the people, as who they are, in the sense of we're all human beings. And I always tell my kids is you don't need to be, but just be a human being. Be a nice human being. It doesn't, and just to brag about my son, my son races go-karts. So in one of his races, he's saw a new driver. And he said, is like, oh, I see that he's a new driver. I'm just going to go say hi. And because that's how I felt, I know how it feels to be the new driver, right? In the grid. And after he went there, and I also said hi to the dad. And again, this is not being positive or anything. It's actually just being a nice human being is, and that changed this kid's moment because he was nervous. It was the first time that he was racing. And the dad told me, oh, my son was about to quit if it wasn't because of your son that just came in. So again, and you touch a little bit on this and saying is, if you feel bad, of course, you're not going to go and do something outrageous. But we are human beings. And that's the part that we always need to be conscious of, right? Is that being just nice human beings go that extra mile. Sorry, I just wanted to share that because I think it's also important when it comes to that toxicity, being positive, right? But I think when you have a moral compass of we're all human beings, we're the same. It is, I think, the part of in superiority for some reason has gotten more and more. Right? You go, now it's Christmas and you get to that parking spot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, you don't have to be all positive. That was my parking spot. But no, but you need to talk like human beings, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know how that relates to.
I am not condoning Karenism, right? Like,
oh, no,
if you go out there and you start screaming at somebody because they parked in your spot, nobody's name is on any spot.
Right.
Get that out of your head. Like, nobody in line, people in line do talk about you if they speak another language. Get over it. It's going to happen. Keep going, right? There's no need to ask for a manager unless there's actually a situation that needs it. And it's
That's
not
true.
Just you being these coupons that are 3 months out of date are still valid. No, nobody's doing that. Go home. I don't condone that. And in fact, I have a tolerance. If I go to the grocery store, I'm fine when I'm walking around, but I don't like people close to me. I love the 6 foot rule. Okay. I loved it. I was like, I want this to stay forever. People can stay away from me. I do not need strangers breathing on me. I have asthma. Getting sick is awful for me. So I appreciated the 6 foot rule. Didn't like masks. Can't breathe as an asthmatic with something over your face. It's just not a thing. But Oh, you get in line and everybody's lined up like this because that's what you had to do in kindergarten or something. Dude, get off my butt. You don't need to be breathing on my neck. I should not feel the air move on my neck because you're breathing. Stop it. And so when I stand in lines, I can mouthy because I'm in a situation where I'm uncomfortable. I have people too close. I feel like everybody's staring at me. I'm just trying to get through the line. And why is this cashier the slowest person since Moses? Like, what is happening? So I know I can get mouthy. So my friend has decided that we'll go grocery shopping and then she goes to the line and I go out to the car because that is what is safest. Nobody deserves to hear my mouth because I'm in a situation I'm uncomfortable in.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at anybody. I'm just uncomfortable because there's too many people too close to me. Why everybody's got to be up your butt when you're in a line? I don't know, but it's a thing. It's gotten a little bit less now that we have those things that we just do ourselves. What are they called again?
Yeah, the self-checkout.
Yeah, that.
It's so funny because I don't know when was the last time I was in a grocery store. Is because I order my food online. I can.
My friend actually now goes grocery shopping for, I give her the list. She goes grocery shopping. She does a lot of it like pre-ordered, but there's some stuff like she wants to pick out her own grapes.
Yeah, no, that's different. We didn't want that bag.
But so like she'll go in for that and then she'll grab my stuff when she's in there. And she does that while I'm in therapy. All greatness is being done without me involved. I don't have to go into a building with a ton of people and I'm in therapy at the same time. So kudos for therapy.
Yeah.
But the real problem comes with toxic positivity because you are blocking people. Because you're telling people you're not happy enough. You're basically telling them they're not being good enough. They're not good enough to be around you. They're not good enough for whatever.
Yeah, you're denying the people's, yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. You're denying people's, other people's feelings. Mm-hmm. You're not making them from a non-therapist, but personal opinion is that I think you're denying them their own feelings because it, and I wonder is it, and I guess a question for you, how do you think, what is on the underlying part of someone that has a toxic positivity? What do you think that, yeah, what is the characteristic of that? Is it something that, I guess that's the question, right?
In my opinion, and again, I deal with mental health. I am not a therapist. I have two of them. They're great. We work on me a lot. But for me, the person who is saying, let's be happy. Everybody's happy this time of year, so you should be happy too. You're not happy enough. Why aren't you happy? There's a problem in their life. And they're covering it. Mm-hmm. There's a problem with their personality. There's a problem with, you know, the relationship they're in. There's a problem somewhere in their life, or they don't feel like they're good enough. So now they only want good vibes. I did that way too well.
Remind me to the movie Clueless.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you stifle growth. You stifle the growth of the person who is being so yeehaw positive, right? Mm-hmm. And you stifle the growth of the person who is not as happy in different ways. So the person who is super happy, or who is at least pretending to be super happy, they want to clear out all the negative stuff because they think that will help them be better.
Mm.
Not true. Because if you're only feeling one emotion all the time, you're denying your other feelings and you should be in therapy. And if you're, you know, if to give the positive vibes people a chance, you know, if you are somebody who isn't as happy, if you have mental health problems or whatever, but when you're with your friends, if you, I mean, look at Eeyore. Pooh and his friends always invited Eeyore and never expected him to be happy. They all had fun. And Eeyore enjoyed being invited. Even if he was still depressed because depression. Right? You can still have friend groups like that as adults. You can have people who get together and maybe one of them, and I'm not saying, oh yes, go sit in a cafe with your friends to talk about life and just bawl the entire time. You shouldn't, like, don't bring everybody down exactly. You don't have to be super happy to be there, but you shouldn't be sobbing all over them every single time you get together either, because again, you have toxic positivity, but you can be toxic in other ways. So that would be toxic, because every meeting with your friends is about you crying. And eventually they're going to start having meetings without you so that they can actually talk to each other without comforting you.
So how do you go about, I don't know if the word is improving or mitigating that toxic positivity?
You have to identify it, right? Just like with AI. If you have somebody like that one story I said with the teacher who was like, he put the words in white so that the kids couldn't see it, but the AI did and got Sally all over everything. But if you identify that there is a problem, we're going back to AA and stuff, right? The first step to anything, the first step to stop being a racist is to go, hey, huh, that's racist. I should probably change how I view things, right? I should do something about that. That is the first step to everything. So if you find, if you look at yourself and you see, you know what? I am portraying online like that I am always happy, that my house is always spotless, you know, that kind of thing. Then maybe it's time to change it up a little bit. Maybe you let them see the, I mean, you have all these places that do all that cooking and they're like, no cleanup afterwards. No, that meant you cleaned while you were going. Not that there was nothing ever to clean, right? So being honest about what it takes to actually do something is a great way to start. Like, you have those people who do those big, huge parties and they're like, no bad feelings here. This is great. I did all this work and it was great. Yeah, no, you were stressed like a mug the day before. I guarantee it. Right? Let's be honest. Identifying that, maybe don't tell people all the time that I am struggling, or that even if I'm not struggling, that, you know what? That was difficult. Being honest about things. Identifying where you're maybe straying into the there are no cats in America type situation. Because this is not FIFO. Again, another movie that made us all cry. But we're doing the movie thing today.
Yeah. So how do you think is, so if the person that has the, so you mentioned a couple of things, is that the person that has the toxic positivity is normally the one that is cheering, is everything. It's, would you say it's like the light of the party always? What would be the other side of, well, it's kind of, how would you tell that person?
So you have your center of attention, right? The one that's always happy, the one that can talk, do all the things, right? And then you have your wallflower who's being told because they stay over there, that's why they have no friends. Why aren't you being their friend if you see them and you're...
So how do you tell that person? Is it that it's being toxic with toxic positivity? Is, so we identify it. So now we know. But is it something that, and of course, like you said, just go to a therapist. Of course, we always recommend that. Mm-hmm. But what would be as a friend, let's say, is you are the friend of that person. What would you say to that? It's like, should I just not be around that toxic positive person?
It depends on how it's affecting you. So okay. I can be friends with somebody who's happy all the time, as long as they're not, I mean, because if they want to portray, that's fine, but they're about to get real with me because I don't do fake, right? But so, like, I can be out in public with that kind of person, and you might say that person's toxic because they're positive all the time. And I'm going, yeah, but not with me because they're my friend. This is something they do to protect themselves when they're in this space, but I know them better than that. So that's why I can be around them. Again, it's seeing the person and the situation for what it is. Some people, when they get into public, right? They do the two spectrums, mostly. There's probably three. You got your wallflower, you got the center of attention, and you got everybody who gravitates towards the center of attention, right? Those are your three. But in private, the wallflower and the center of attention are friends, and like they don't deny each other's feelings. But in public, it's just as, you know, it's
the opposite
mechanism where they're like, this is who I am in public. Sometimes without realizing it, so you can try to steer them to try to chill that a little bit. But sometimes you don't need, it's again, it's a coping mechanism to some people. So you just have to remind them that in public, you can't always deny people's feelings. It's not a good thing. I am all about being real, right? I will tell you if you are being a douche. I will tell you if you're being great. And we can argue or not, but I'm going to stick to my guns. If you are constantly going out and, oh, when we're out, you should smile a lot. I'm going to tell you, yeah, get a new friend. Not going to happen here. That hurts my face. Next. I smile. I've smiled a lot even during this. I can feel it. My cheeks are starting to hurt.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. Right? I love that.
But that doesn't mean when I get in public that unless I'm having a conversation with somebody that I'm just going to be happy joy. Another thing. I'm just getting into all the stuff today. But the worst thing that anybody can do with being toxic positive or whatever is saying everything happens for a reason. I've heard that after some bad situations. And I can guarantee you the times that I most wanted to throat punch somebody is when they were saying those words. Never hit anybody. I'm not doing that kind of thing, right? But it's real mad
yes.
when you've just gone through some difficult situation and everybody's going, everything happens for a reason. God loves you.
No.
Not right now, he doesn't apparently. No. So please stop doing that.
I think that's a form of toxic positivity that I've never thought about. Is it is definitely that part of being cheerful, because some of us are programmed to be cheerful in everything. And I think it's embedded. And again, I'm not against religion. I'm not against any person. But I think it's a mechanism for us to deny those feelings of, if I'm grieving or I'm sad or I'm anger, but put a face to it to say, oh, but there's a reason why this is. I think it's, I've never seen it, but it is a true aspect of toxic positivity, because it's denying the reality of those feelings. And I think by saying, oh yeah, there was a reason, like you said, right? This happens for a reason, because there was some verse that I don't remember at this point right now, but it was something like that, is that... Oh, it doesn't matter how bad it is. It always happens for a reason. Yes.
It's very angering. That's very angering. Like,
it's frustrating to
bad kids. Happens for somebody yes. to feel like God has a reason. That's a great big reason right there why a lot of people have stepped back from a religion, is because somebody has said something stupid like that when they're going through a bad... No. that had nothing to do with this. This happened because I was in a car accident because there was a drunk on the road, or there was this that happened, right? And nothing, God has his part in whatever, but it's not in putting a drunk behind the wheel, right? It's at least not in my not in my feelings of what religion is. We also do it to ourselves, right? You know how when we're feeling bad, we're going through something and we'll say, it only happened for 2 days, or it only happened once. It happens to other people a lot.
Oh, wow. Never heard that one, but
there are other people.
What does that mean? Worse.
Remember when you were sitting at dinner and you didn't want to finish your peas because peas are disgusting, and your parent was like, there are starving kids in Ethiopia.
Oh,
what does that have to do with me? I don't want them. They can have them then. Send them the peas. I don't care. But remember, our parents used to say that all the time.
Yes,
we couldn't eat our food.
Yes,
that's toxic positivity right there. Like,
that is so toxic and racist thing to say. But it's true. We grew up like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is. Oh, yeah, because it could have been, okay, no, so I'm cheering on something bad because it could have been worse.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely, yeah. Gosh, wow, Nikki, you're into something definite.
And we can only fix ourselves. So, like, you asked how I could identify. I can identify in other people with the snap of my finger. Get me in front of somebody, and I would be like, that is plastic. That is a Barbie. And I'm not playing with it. I don't do fake, right? I want real people when I'm talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, identifying somebody else's problems, sure, I can do it. It just means that I'm probably not going to be friends with that person. I don't want that type of... I'm not going to start a relationship that's going to start off with that person being toxic. Not exactly the best decision in life. Right? Like, mm-hmm. if you know somebody's toxic, that is the stupidest thing on the planet to go, oh, I should be their friend. Because guess what? You're just making like a red flag in front of a bull. Although apparently they're colorblind. Whatever. But the big thing is identifying it in yourself and changing yourself. Not a thing that happens overnight. You don't just say, oh, I'm never going to do that again. Oh, guess what? I got news for you. Yes, you are. Guaranteed you are. Because right now, the response you have is because of your parents at dinner. Oh, I should eat all of what I have in front of me because somebody's starving somewhere. What did you, them starving, have anything to do with you finishing your meal?
Yeah.
But we have that thing in our head.
Yeah.
And if you're going through a bad situation, knowing that it is okay to be upset.
Absolutely.
Yes. It is okay to feel whatever it is you're feeling. Work on it, though. Don't just sit.
I was just going to say that. Don't dwell in that.
Yeah.
But is, yes, I think one of the things that we've done in our community, starting from our house, is to suppress those feelings because we feel that they have a negative connotation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, again, this is just personal opinion, but I do believe that when we allow people to own those feelings, and of course, is always like you tell your kids, right? Is like I tell my kid, he lost one of the races. And I said, son, we lose some, we win some. It's okay to be upset. I'm frustrated. Just don't dwell on it, right? So it is different from being a like toxic positivity. Oh, there was a purpose for this race. And no, or the example of what you're trying to say, right? Mm-hmm. Is like, it happened for a reason. Like, there's a purpose. No, You weren't.
It's okay to be upset that you didn't win. Like, exactly. I'm so sorry your tire fell off in the third round. But, yeah. Like, we'll work on the car. We'll work, like, tips on what to do when emergencies
happen. What did you
learn
from it, right?
Yes. What did you learn? What can we do better the next time? And you keep trucking. Some situation, you learn to not be around certain people. So you learn what to look for the next time.
Right.
As a sign that you should not do this. Well, you have all those people going on Tinder dates or whatever, right? And then they end up on TikTok or somewhere going, my
I didn't like this.
This was horrible. He totally started saying that my boobs were big, and that's why he was on the date with me. We have grown as a society in a lot of ways, yeah. And we have not grown as a society in a lot of ways. I think Mike Tyson said at one point that we're getting too comfortable with not being hit in the face for things we've said online. And for some people, that is completely real. They think that they can go and say anything they want online and nothing will ever come of it. And people are being sued. And if you're swatting people, those people are going to jail. Mm-hmm. Like, you're causing problems for yourself. You're getting fired from jobs for doing it. Things are happening. Some of it is good. Like, you should be fired from your job if you're a raging racist and you're hiring only one class of people because mm-hmm. they work the best with me. That's something that the company can get in a crap ton of trouble for. So you being fired right. is a good thing. There are other things that them being fired for doesn't really make sense, but whatever. I can't say what's good or bad to other people. I can only change what I do and how I think of things. So if I think an injustice was done to me, that means I have to fix my part in it.
Yeah.
I don't fix everybody else's part, but I fix my part and I do my work.
I love that. It's like self-accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean it in a positive way. We always have this connotation of accountability is a bad thing. It's like, oh, they need to be accountable for it. No, it's actually being have ownership, right? And I think that's the important thing. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So do you have any final thoughts?
No, this has been a great conversation, Nikki. I love it. I think the insights, we talk about everything. We talk about AI. We talk about mental health, which I think is very important. And everything that we do is to keep not a toxic positivity, mm-hmm. but a real understanding that we are human beings. And mm-hmm. yes, we own our own feelings and we are okay with that. There's a reason why these feelings exist. Because it's okay. So I think on my part, thank you. Thank you. This is being an enjoyable time. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
I have enjoyed it as well. It went much better than I thought from when I read the thing, because I read that and I went, oh, this is going to be interesting. And then I get in here with you and it was interesting. So I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I just love that, like you said, is just having a conversation. And sometimes we need more of that. We need more of these type of conversations because there's a lot of, first of all, human health is a taboo for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate it. And again, I'm trying not to be so cheery here, but I appreciate that is you bringing awareness to these type of things, because something that really opened my mind to what you just said about we've been programmed to say always, but yeah, it's like everything happens for a purpose or things like that. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. We as humans, we make our own destiny in the sense of it's the reality of our lives. And I think sometimes understanding that we owe it to ourselves to be able to, yeah, of course, is... If you're angry or you're sad or you're happy or you're cheery, there's always a time to, and you own those feelings, but knowing not to dwell on those to be able to make you, and I always, like I said, because I'm agnostic, I'm not the positive vibes, because I do understand sometimes is not, oh, hey, yeah, we cannot be cheery all the time. And it's okay to be sad, but not dwelling on it, right? It's knowing that whatever the label is there's a human behind. Just like we learned earlier today about when there's an AI application, right? There's a human behind it with an agenda. Well, yeah, in this case, yes, your agenda is your well-being. That's my agenda, right? I want to be okay. But don't tell me just to be positive all the time when I do need to be angry for things that I'm angry, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's, and I know this is a very long thought, closing thought, but it's like you said, I think we, even bringing the term Karen, we assume that everybody is a Karen and everything is a Karen when you don't know what the person has just been gone through. If I met you at a store and I accidentally or without knowing that you have asthma and I'm close to you and you snap at me, probably I would say, oh yeah, you're a Karen, right? You're all that. But understanding the reasoning behind it, and I always say, and I hope I'm doing this well with my kids, is you need to have empathy for people, because we're talking about toxic positivity, but sometimes I feel like the people that come and being very cheerful, even when it reminds me to a funeral that I went to, and it was that, it's like the person passed away, my two parents passed away, and you're programmed to say, but it was God's will, right? It's like you should think it in the positive, right? It's, no, I'm hurting, I'm grieving, I'm it's okay to do that. It's okay. Whatever your religious views are, it's okay. I think it's, again, I'm not against that. But I think that's where, and I appreciate you bringing this awareness of positive toxic positivity, because is definitely something that we all need to be aware of, that it happens. Just because you see me sad, of course, you're going to ask me, hey, how you're doing? It's okay. You're going to be okay. Them coming is, oh, come on, be happy, smile. Because no, I think, and now even for me, I'm learning and I appreciate that, because it is bringing awareness to me in the sense of, like, it's not always just be the cheering guy at all times. It's understanding, have empathy into what is going on in your life that is making you have this feeling, and it's in knowing that it's okay. And of course, like you said, you're not going to dwell in it, you're not going to act upon it, but it's okay to have that feeling. So that's that. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the time, Nikki.
Okay, for my final thought, remember Robin Williams was a great comedian.
He made
millions of people laugh all the time, right? He died from what he died from because of depression and fear of what he was going to go through. I think he got diagnosed with something, from what I remember. And so he decided, and he was, you know, in his personal circles, people knew he was depressed, but everybody in the world just thought he was this happy person because he was always giving us the laughter. And I use humor to teach people, to talk to people, because if you're laughing at what I'm saying, you're listening. You can't laugh at something and not have heard it. So if I'm trying to get a point across, I'll make a joke out of it so that you're laughing, and then maybe you'll remember that, oh yeah, Nikki said this.
Listening.
And then she'll kill me. There's that whole, you know, that thought process of, you know, let's remember. But I am the furthest from okay 90% of the time. I have so much stuff that I am working on and trying to move forward through because I haven't had the best of lives, right? You never know from day to day what the person next to you is going through, whether they are being toxically positive or they are being sad, right? You don't know what is happening in their life. I tend not to judge people too harshly unless they turn into, you can't really tell what they're doing because they're that fake. I can't do fake. But I try to be there for the people I know. I try to cheer them up because it's the only way I know how. And I will talk with them and try to do things. But I know that I personally have never told anybody that things happen for a reason and that God still loves you anyway. Because I am religious. I do have my beliefs. Mm-hmm. I don't force them on anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe just because I have my beliefs, you have to believe the same thing. But what I do believe is God loves us all, but he doesn't just pluck somebody off the earth because he feels like it. That's not how this whole thing works. Mm-hmm. So when we're doing things, make sure we're identifying our feelings first. Mm-hmm. And if you are upset, have it. Own it. It's yours. And then work on it. Don't stay angry.
I love that.
Don't stay in the sadness after a loved one dies. Work through the grief process. There's the stages of grief, acceptance, whatever that is. But I don't remember them off the top of my head. But work on it. Work through it so that when you come out the other side, maybe you reach back and help somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much.